university like to start with the first time?
The legal crusade against smoking. I have a question whether the target audience is you. You know, their audience may be more broad than that in the legislation, but the target audience of the department is you. When you take something that's not a criminal activity and you criminalize it, and you cause youth to become involved in the criminal system of the nothing, is it permissible to cause a youth to become captive in the criminal system for something which is not criminal activity?
I don't understand. What do you mean criminal activity? It's an avera to commit suicide. So the halacha says you're not allowed to smoke.
Right, that may be halachically so.
But that's not a criminal activity. It's not bin adam al-havera. That's a person who's committing suicide if he smokes.
But that's a question of heshbon, teshkafa, not where you should criminalize it in the civil courts.
Right.
You're not allowed to put
Why the government is making it a criminal activity that what? That they put you in prison if you smoke.
They want to make it a criminal activity.
If you smoke in public, if you cause other people to get sick. No, it is a criminal activity. I'm killing other people. I'm a murderer.
That's very, you know.
That's murder. What do you mean?
Where the secondhand smoke is actually, you know.
No, it's not actually.
Why the government?
Numerous reports that this actually kills people.
We follow the Tanaim. The Tanaim used to follow the doctors of their generation. We follow the doctors of our generation. The doctors say that it kills people.
That's
criminal activity then. Okay.
It still should be an educational issue. Why is it becoming a legal issue?
The government should first make it educational. They should educate everybody, and then if it doesn't help, then they should make it criminal. Okay? So the government should decide first to do.
We want to take the issues of halacha and throw them into the civil arena.
Murder?
No.
Murder is when the Sheva Mitzvah is Ben Enoyach.
We want to throw Shabbos into the civil arena.
Shabbos is not when the Sheva Mitzvah is Ben Enoyach, but murder is when the Sheva Mitzvah is Ben Enoyach. So if the doctors of our generation have ascertained, if the Surgeon General has ascertained that smoking in public causes a sakana to other people and you mikatsa their lives, so that's a criminal activity. So first they should try to educate the public, and if it doesn't help, then they should try to press criminal charges against them. Why not?
It's a hard press to, you know, make the case that smoking in a park in the open air is going to endanger somebody. When
I'm
they
not
get
familiar
down
with
parts per million, what you're inhaling is a real hard press and it's a kind of it.
I mean, the doctors made it up from thin air. It's not true. So in court, they should argue it out. And when the legislation wants to pass such a law, so the group should say, hasn't yet been ascertained that it's murder. Okay.
It is with alcohol, no? We have a law that prohibition.
Yeah, but if I drink alcohol, it doesn't make anybody else sick. But over here.
Because if you see your family, you know, there's ramifications.
Okay. So it's a Dennis criminal activity. Okay. Why not?
It's not about smoking or obesity, is that okay for you? It's about advanced directives, about end of life decision making and setting up a, let's say, a living will. So first, just the question whether or not the recommendation of the Rebbe's whether she should do that. But second of all, if a living will is set up, how specific should it be? What are the recommendations for specificity? In this case, the person, the proxy should do this, etc. Or should it just be blanket, setting up a proxy and letting that person's judgment be the judgment?
They should set up a proxy. The proxy should interview the person. They should pick as a proxy a rabbi whom he knows very well, who knows him very well, and they know what his attitude is on all the things. People who picked me as their clergyman spoke to me for a while, and they told me when it comes to the end, they want this, they don't want that. So I know where they're holding.
Are those specifics written, or it's just that you know and you'll put the statements in the place?
They didn't write it. I didn't write it, but I know what their attitude is.
But what's the recommendation about having it written? Is that us, or is it?
No, it's a very good idea. Have everything spelled out explicitly. Yeah.
If a person refuses to accept what a doctor says, right? I'll give a case I know. Doctor evaluated the child for milk allergy. They said, it doesn't appear to be allergic. The mother says, no, I think he's allergic. The doctor said, okay, none of the blood tests indicate this, but we will do a food challenge. A food challenge is where they go to the hospital, they give the child a measured amount of dairy products, and they observe them for, it's either 2 or 3 hours to see if any allergic reaction occurs. And Because in the hospital, if anything happens, they need to intervene right away. Child is observed for 2 to 3 hours, no reaction whatsoever. The doctor says, in our observation, the child has zero allergy to milk, and we strongly recommend that the child be given milk because otherwise the diet would be deficient. They're not getting enough calcium, they're not getting enough vitamin D. The mother continues to say, I don't believe it.
I mean, the mother thinks that there is a reaction, but it's not within
the
first 3 hours.
Yes, but it's not showing that. It's like, you know, the mother says, I'm going home to see this.
She knows better. I'm a sugar now, okay. Let's tell me she's
not better. Is there any, I mean, as I'm saying, she's a sugar. Is there any, you know, formal or, what should I say, framework to give her to say, listen, you know, if the doctor says this, then I'll be din. At some point, we have to...
As I said before, we should follow in the footsteps of the Tanaim. The Tanaim used to follow the doctors of their generation. They didn't have halacha l'moshe m'Sinai mis. The Chasam Sofer says they heard all this from Goyish doctors. And whatever the doctors said, they followed. So we should follow the doctors of our generation. If the doctors of our generation, unless the doctors in the hospital are not so good, so go to a better hospital.
We're talking about my son in New York, so I'll say this.
Great. Okay, it's a good hospital. I would think so.
If someone needs an organ and he's down the list, he's not available to him readily, so he, the halacha, can he get the organ on the black market? Can he buy the organ? Can he not through the regular channel? And is he mechuyut? If so, is the Koch Nefesh maybe mechuyut? Mechuyut to him in case the favor is online.
If a person needs an organ, he's 150 on the list, and he's not going to get it during his lifetime. Is he allowed or obligated to buy it on the black market? The Mishnah has a din in Gittin that was relevant recently. That you're not allowed to pay ransom money to the pirates who kidnapped a Jewish person more than the going rate in the slave market. Why? So the Gemara says, because he just encouraged the pirates to kidnap more people. He's putting more people into Sakana. But this Shavui, it's Pikuach Nefesh for him. So the answer is, you'll put other people's lives into Sakana. It's not proper. So here, if you're going to use the black market, so you're going to ruin the whole system. The United Nations has a whole, they're trying to control.
If
you don't like, you're allowed to.
However, there's a real danger. All the evidence indicates that the black market represents a real sakana for those.
That what?
It's a danger for the recipients. They're infected.
Why should he hasten his death? He may be hastening his death.
Yes, Chayisha.
It may not be Chayisha. He may hasten his death.
No, it's anyway Chayisha. I mean, take risks.
$100,000.
I don't know. I was never in this situation, Baruch Hashem. I would think that it's not a good idea. I think it's not a good idea. You want to raise the possibility one should be obligated to in order to extend his life. What do they have? Percentages? What percentage of the organs that are gotten through the black market?
Depends where you go. If it's in China, it's either, you know, hepatitis. I mean, you have a whole host of cancer.
And there are certain countries where they kill people in order to. So you're paying money that they should murder someone in order to save your life. That's for sure. That's not right. Is that a common practice, or is that only in China?
They reduced that. They
what?
They reduced it. They used to kill the prisoners.
Right.
And now they stopped it.
They stopped it already?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I don't know enough about the facts. If you think that they're going to kill someone in order to provide an organ for you, so that's not permissible. And it depends how likely is it that it's going to be infected. It may hasten your death. May not.
You're going to pay someone. You're going to find someone who's ready to give you their organ for money. You yourself will find a donor who can give you for money.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Is that
is that against the law?
Yeah.
That's also against the law.
It's a law. You cannot.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Good shot. So how can the American government make a law that is against pikuach nefesh? Well, what's the logic to the American law?
What did Rav first say about the
what? What?
The Rav first explained about the international system. That's how the Rav began the discussion. Rav said that there's a system set up places where we can have it in the system. And I'm just reminding you of what Rav said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also because it leads to chaos. In other words, having a system of people lined up, if you will, ensures that there's some system that people can get. If it's called al gvar, then the whole system breaks down.
The system is based on finance.
I was involved in a case of a girl, a young girl who was just given birth. She had a virus that attacked her heart. She was not an American citizen, Israeli citizen. The American system would revive her when she went into cardiac arrest and then send her home. She would go into cardiac arrest again. Eventually, they found in Italy it's legal to sell organs privately. She was able to acquire, through donations, a heart from Italy, which would be flown to Israel, to Shari Tzedek. They said it's illegal for them to do the surgery, but they'll do it if we get the heart from the patient here, we'll do it. Unfortunately, she went into cardiac arrest again at the airport. She was unable to get on the airplane. Heart went to some other person. But in the end, it was $1 million cash posted before they would operate. She had to have $500,000 in bond before they put her on the list for a heart, and $1 million cash before they operated.
Because it was illegal.
They called Nidre appeal.
Because it was illegal, that's why. Yeah.
So,
Din Machlusa does make a difference.
Even though Pikuach Nefesh has no
right. I would think so, because the whole Din of the Machlusa was made because we want to have a system. Look, every system, there are people who are cheating. Just because there are people who are cheating doesn't mean that everyone was allowed to cheat. The system was established for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, common sense, for the sake of Nefesh, in order that there should be more Pikuach Nefesh.
Area.
I would assume it's probably not permissible. Yeah.
Switch an area to discuss later on during circumcision. I have a situation, it's a twofold question, where I try to encourage the young couple who are religious to have a regular bris milah, but they did. They had by a physician, and then I invited them loyally to do my Tavistan bris, and he questioned whether I should have really, it's like encouraging them. I didn't do it through the Vienna, I kind of feel it, have a regular circumcision, but again, so if you're expressing the Tavistan bris, please charge me on our. Secondly, we have situations where we have people medically cannot have circumcision done for a variety of reasons. So they have to go to a surgeon first to do it and then do a Thomas Congress one year after.
I think you're right. You should always try to encourage the parents to have a bris done by a religious model, and second best is to have a Thomas done bris, okay?
One case was a religious couple, but they couldn't. Childish from previous marriage, it's a good. And the guy with the father with a problem with Smeal, the son couldn't have it due to certain body deficiencies. So he had a surgeon do it first, and that's how it's done.
Okay.
There's no way around.
Okay. Sometimes he can have the male participate in part of the surgery.
It was possible to have a help and had a surgeon do it back to the male for short distance.
Okay, it's a lot of good. If you have a religious surgeon, it's a lot of good. That's the best thing. This week there were two cases here in the yeshiva. Two different couples had boys, and neither boy could have the bris on time. So they were going to have to postpone it in order to do some corrective surgery months down the line. So Moshe Feinstein writes in his sefer that the correct practice is they should give the baby a name. So when they made a spell for the baby, the idea that we only give the name by the bris is based on Parshas Lech Lecha. Then when Avraham Avinu had his bris, then his name was changed to Avraham. So that's what the Mate Moshe is quoted a lot by the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch. Mate Moshe says that's the mocker for the meaning, that you give the name by the bris. But Moshe says that's if it's normal. The bris is going to be the eighth day, a couple of days later, you postpone a day, until we're going to postpone it half a year. So what you should be mispalel hatinoik ben hoisha plainet. So give the baby a name. So they got an aliyah and they said a mishaberach, like you say, you give a name for a baby girl. So they gave a name for a baby boy. Then I have the bris down the line. One of the fellows had was way out of town, he was in Europe, his wife gave birth to a baby. So the Rabbanim there have a strange practice when you can't perform the Bris Milah and they're going to have to do corrective surgery, so they don't want to embarrass the family. So they make a make-believe Bris, they have a party, and everybody comes, and they have an oil, and he doesn't say a bracha, he just folds back the Or HaOrla, and he lets it flop back. So there was such an opinion that was rejected. When you fold back the Or HaOrla, even though you didn't cut it off, there was such an opinion that that constitutes a Bris Milah. And then when it flips back again, so that's called Nimshech HaOrlosa, and the whole need for Milah is only with the Rabbanan then. But that opinion has not been accepted. So they do it, I guess, in order not to embarrass the family. The whole public doesn't have to know, okay, you want to make a party. You have a party, your wife had a baby.
So the Nin Chasashu guy discusses that also. The Nin Chasashu discusses that kind of procedure.
Oh, yeah?
He said that they take a little cut in the Orla, and then he said they don't just pull it back, they actually somehow tuck it back. So it's like Nidalga. It doesn't actually come all the way back. And he quotes that the different time, I think, wants to say that that's a video that that's a valid bris.
Uh-huh.
That's a very strange case. And he says in that case, he mentioned that case where surgery is necessary and they have to preserve the orla for some reason. It lets them do the meal of his mano and still preserve the orla. Mm-hmm. And he says you shouldn't make a bracha because my folks thought it's really valid bris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rabbi Nezer wrote 100 years ago about this corrective surgery. So he says, you wait till you do the surgery. And at that time, you'll do the bris. You're permitted to postpone a bris because of this issue. So the father called me on the phone, but they told him his koris. His chayv koris. I told him, you're not chayv koris. When the baby will be bar mitzvah and he won't want to be mal himself, then you begin to discuss koris. The father's not chayv koris because he didn't do the meal of his man, and the baby's not going to be chayv koris for a long time. And the guy's going to come back to America and do the surgery here in America. He doesn't want to do it in Europe. He's going to do the surgery in America in another 6 months. So at that time, I'll do the bris. I'll get it from a surgeon. I'll do the bris then.
There was a question, I think, that more Nogant nowadays, especially in terms of the political sphere, in terms of socialized medicine, what is Halakha's attitude? Is there a governmental responsibility to provide health care for every one of its citizens, and if there is, to what extent? Like, when is that called responsible and irresponsible, financially or otherwise?
We all have an obligation. Look, every government has an obligation to take care of its the welfare of all of its citizens, unless they're going to go broke. The government is going to go broke, so there's no seichel. But if they think they're not going to go broke, so they should institute such kind of socialized medicine. If it's reasonable. Look, if the people can get a better plan than when the government can give them, so everyone who can afford it should get a better plan. But there is an obligation. That's what governments are for, to try to take care of all the well-being of all the people. The Pashtus is that, yes.
Question. This is related to the obesity of diabetes, where it's become rampant and really epidemic. One of the ways to monitor is to check finger sticks and to check what your glucose is on a regular basis. You may not make changes that much based on if you're on insulin, maybe you make more of an alpha. But in terms of checking on Shabbos and Yom Tov, do it as part of routine and criteria. Is that a problem, or is it something that you should encourage people to do or not to check?
I mean, a person who really knows that he has a condition.
He has diabetes, he's on medication, but may not make changes, but the thing is that if it's very high or very low, that's something that you have to intervene immediately. Should you do it routinely on Shabbos, the check?
Whatever is the suffix hakana you have to do, even if it's outright malacha deraisa. The Chazon Ish recommends you should try not to do routinely the same way as you do in the weekdays. So what instead? How often they check every 10 hours or whatever?
So maybe checking 4 or 5 times a day.
Oh.
Especially on Shabbos when the suit is different, it may make nothingness. On insulin, it definitely makes nothingness. On medication, you may adjust things a little bit, but it's really not a day to day change that you're making necessarily unless. Mm-hmm. Something else going on.
They check 4 or 5 times a day. I don't think they should minimize. I think they should do everything the same as the weekdays. Chazon Ish recommends the fire department shouldn't do everything on Shabbos the same way they do in the weekday. Even though it's a suffix sakonas nefashes, it's not really. They can they don't have to polish all the machinery on Shabbos. They should do a little less. But if they have a patient, everything is mamish a suffix sakonas. So you should do everything as usual. Remember, there was a woman in Tattersville who said that she had some kind of a condition of cancer, and she takes pills every day to control it, but Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, she doesn't take the pills. I said, are you crazy? She said, no, she's still here. It's already 20 years. She doesn't take it, and she's still here to talk about it. I think she's still alive. Pretty sure she's still alive. I said, if I were you, I would not have that practice. Suffix sakana.
I've asked a doctor, Dr. Markila, and he's actually told me that in some cases you can tell patients it's one day.
Okay. The doctor says it's good. Yesterday a student had a shayla. He had some kind of condition, a chodesh she'ein bo sakana. And the doctor told me he has to take pills every day. He tells me a big fat pill. I forgot already what the condition was. He wants to know, is he allowed to take the pill on Shabbos? I asked him, did he ask the doctor, but they have to take every day? He said, he didn't ask the doctor. So I said, today you should take the pill. And after Shabbos, call the doctor. And if he says he can skip a day, so next Shabbos he should skip. But I wouldn't skip if I don't know one way or the other. And it could be that by skipping one day, he's going to fall back into this condition. So then, Chodesh Shein B'Sakana is permitted to take medication on Shabbos. Not only if you already are a Chodesh, to prevent one from becoming Chodesh Shein B'Sakana, it says in Shulchan Aruch also. All the kulas apply. When the Mamrutmerg was in jail, and the Talmidim came everybody to learn with him in the prison. So they used to ask the Goyish and guards to make the fire on Shabbos, because we assume Hakko Chodesh Meitzel Atzino. It was chilly, so they may catch a cold. So to prevent them from catching a cold, Amir Lenachri is Mutta. All the kulas for Chodesh Shein B'Sakana apply whether the person already is a Chodesh Shein B'Sakana or to prevent them from becoming a Chodesh Shein B'Sakana.
These days, there are a lot of doctors putting people prophylactically on statin drugs to control cholesterol. And it's kind of coming out now that this big spike of diabetes is partially due to the fact that the statins are causing diabetes as a side effect. I have a question whether the prophylactic prescription for...
Who is that information from?
I saw something written on some doctor research that someone gave to me. I don't know the number of it was a medical report.
I think the risk of hypercholesterolemia...
Right. I'm talking, right now that it's only prophylactic. I did not have, high cholesterol. And if I started taking statins, I became diabetic. I'm not overweight. I have none of the markers. And he said to me, he is probably...
Did you stop it? You stopped
the statins. I stopped the statins.
And the sugars went back to normal?
They're going down.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I just was familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm not normal. I'm still with medication sitting around 140. On 1,500 milligrams of metformin. So it's not normal by any means.
What's the question?
The question is whether you take something prophylactically if there's even a chashash to come. When you take prophylactic, there's no indication.
Whatever the doctors recommend, look. You have to ask an expert. You can ask a rabbi. You need a rabbi doctor.
It's not a question, it's a comment. I'm just listening to the dialogue. I don't know the dentist, so I don't get these kind of shadows on the rabbi. But it's very instructive to all of us. The way a child is asked to a knowledgeable rabbi, something that may have a consensus in the medical community or a consensus among rabbanim, doesn't necessarily mean that it applies to the individual. That's why it's very important to go to a rabbi like Rav Shapta, who does, even in this type of discussion, he asks specific, about the individual, because every case is different. And even with the medical stuff, there are exceptions to the statistical norm. So it's really important for everyone to present the details of his or her shayla to a rabbi who spends the time to try to get to the, to how they help this particular person.
Further along in terms of this suffix sakana question, there's also, because of the obesity epidemic, this idea of sleep apnea has become very, very prevalent also. And the recommendation now is that they have certain devices that you have to sleep at night that are obviously generated by electricity and definitely have to be plugged in and turned on. In terms of Shabbos, for example. Now again, there is a chash of sudden death, but it's really down in the future. I don't think there's any data that looks about taking doing 6 out of 7 days. should you, are you allowed to use one of these devices? I mean, I guess it's the same thing using, putting on, like, children have asthma, but that's probably more something's going to occur. If you use one of these devices, you're going to have to turn it on in order for it to function, or to use it at night when you sleep.
Whenever you have a suffix sakana, so even if it's nowhere near 50-50, it's also considered suffix sakana. Unless it's 5 million to 1, so then the chasam sofer is echid mini elef alfei alofim, so that's not called a suffix sakana. And even if this fellow is nervous, say, Tom, take a tranquilizer. It's not called a suffix sakana. But if it's a suffix sakana, that a certain percentage of the population would be nervous about. It's not 1 in 5 million. It's 1 in 300. So a lot of people would say that's a joke, and other people would be nervous about that. So then the din is, it depends on each and every individual person. For the one who is nervous, it's called the suffix sakana. For the one who's not nervous, if a person is nervous, and it's one chance in 5 million, so we tell them that's not called the suffix sakana. But if it's a reasonable 1 in 300, that's a suffix sakana. So then it depends whether that particular person is nervous or not. I remember one of my classmates told me that he has this problem. He's afraid he may die in the middle of the sleep apnea or whatever, and he doesn't think he's going to use the machine on Shabbos. I said, are you crazy? Are you nervous about it? He said, yeah, he is nervous. He's nervous and he's not going to use it on Shabbos. It's a suffix sakana. If you're nervous at that, then it's called the suffix sakana. It probably depends each person how bad his condition is.
I guess the heavier you are, the more. But the truth is, I think that the sudden death that they report with it is not really. I don't think it's ice to help them based on how heavy you are. If you have it, you're at risk. If you don't have it, you're not at risk. So.
Well, what happens is they actually evaluate a person's sleep laboratory. The person goes to the laboratory, sleeps there overnight, and they hook the person up with sensors, and they actually have a recording of how many times during the night the person stopped breathing. And yes, really, I had to do this once, so I know about it. And they actually tell you afterwards if they think you need to have what they call a positive air pressure, continuous positive air pressure or not. And people that they tell them they do, I mean, at least when I had a discussion with doctors, said, well, if you think you need it, then you need it. They didn't put it as like,
not a recommendation, yeah. So suffix sakana, so you have no choice.
But I have a situation with the sleep apnea. Both my doctor and the machine people told me that I could turn it on before Shabbos and let it go the entire Shabbos. Also, you put on a timer. There's a possibility around it. It's the only thing like it happened. Second of all, another situation is you go over the chapter. The colleague classmate was turned out to be in the hospital for 3 weeks. I asked Shiloh maybe if I had spoken to you on the Masuda job, but nevertheless I asked it to my rabbi who asked it from Shiva, why and someone else, and indicated about the fact that the Shom Shah nervous told me I have to ring for the nurse to take me to the bathroom. But so the Rashid was just shittily. But I came back and said, what about the fact that if the nurse sleeps by my room or stays by my room, I can call to her, the system works fine. But I didn't have to play with the shinoi with my Parkinson's illness, I wouldn't really be able to do the proper shinoi anyway, mm-hmm. The whole thing. So it worked out fine. The nurses were happy, I was happy. So sometimes stuff that you mentioned the fire department, you have to polish the machine, polish the your engine, you have to be ready to fight a fire, same thing here. But you do the violate, not to violate the Shabbos, not to make it money and try to do the thing possible.
Mm-hmm. I was told that the old machines that they used to have can be set up from before Shabbos, and the new machines that they make now.
Yeah, the new machines are the problem.
Yeah,
the
problem.
Old Shabbos, the old
mm-hmm.
And even the new machines that you can still set up with a timer, too.
Is that very good?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes in reconstructive surgery, cosmetic surgery, typically breast reconstruction, they use service tactic tattooing. For cosmetic reasons, if you want it done, you have to tattoo the woman. Not purely for cosmetic reasons, but make it look realistic. Had to for that.
I was told that Rabbi Yashiv thought that it was permissible. What I was told was that he thought that the prohibition, the Issa deraisa of tattooing, is only if you write oiseus, if you write letters, if you just make a mark. That's only the Rabbanon, And he thought that for psychological well-being of the woman, if she's going to feel that she lost the whole femininity, whatever, so that he considered that like a chadushim b'sakana, that she shouldn't be aggravated for the rest of her life. He thought that that was sufficient cause to allow the use of the rabban. Yeah.
I'm in a situation where I deal with inmates at Rikers Island, many of the children in the younger days, because of members of gangs who had tattoos on them, and have been told the story that it can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. And the question is, they asked me, do I have to go through surgery to remove the tattoo as part of the treatment process? I said, if you do it, it's not expensive and it's effective, but if you don't do it, you can still be buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Of course, you can be buried in a Jewish cemetery. The person is Jewish, he can be buried in Jewish cemetery.
The process nowadays involves using lasers, and it is pretty expensive because they've got multiple treatments. What they come back is actually burn out the ink.
Mm-hmm.
And if the person had a very extensive tattoo, it can take, you know, like 10 sessions or 15 sessions to get it all out. And each session costs $100, which is
all
right. Yeah. You can start to imagine how expensive. You know, I'm not sure if it's always reasonable to say that part of the treatment process is the person must do it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Depends what he has on the tattoo.
Anesthesia for breasts, for kids, and some tattoos without using the animal or the shots.
Different opinions? I don't know. In Europe, there were different opinions. Some held that, in the days of the Tannaim, they knew how to use a local anesthetic and they never did it, so you see that you're not supposed to use even a local anesthetic. Others said the Tannaim didn't have any anesthetic at all, and it's a shaila that just came up in recent years, so they say to have a total anesthetic, you should be mamish sleeping, the person should be sleeping through the whole bris. So by a gear, they thought that's not right. By a baby, someone else will hold it. It's not right, but a local anesthetic, they thought is good. And others thought that even a total anesthetic is good, even by a ger. He said in advance he wants to become a ger and he wants to have the milah. So then they put him to sleep. He's not awake at the time that they're performing the bris, but he authorized it already. He already made the kabbalah sal mitzvahs. There are different opinions. I understand Rabbi Tendler insists that you mechuyev to use a local anesthetic. Why should it be inside the baby unnecessarily? Sounds good. Do most of the Moilam do that? I don't know. Most of the Moilam use a local anesthetic.
Most of the religious Moilam don't. Most of the Moilam who deal with irreligious people tend to do that here in Eretz Yisrael. Because, but it's driven by, it's not driven medically, it's driven socially. It's driven by what they see in the news reports and what people tell them. So they tell them.
I thought years ago they used to say that the little baby on the eighth day doesn't even feel anything.
It's not true.
Not true. Okay.
No, there is some pain.
So that little pain.
They've done studies that you can tell pain, and they've done on EMGs and things. But pain is pain.
Pediatric dentist used to say that when I was at Columbia years ago, but obviously that's not the case.
Not true. Okay.
In terms of the parallels of smoking and obesity in this country having dangerous effects on both people and everyone around you, would there ever be an issue in terms of throwing a simcha or a party? Would there ever be a problem issue of serving infamously unhealthy foods like liver or sweetbread or tongue, which have extremely high levels of cholesterol in them or unhealthy fat? Or you're putting a stumbling block in front of someone, or you're promoting someone, even taste a little bit would only be furthering the problem to the community at home.
Even to taste a little bit is also furthering the problem.
Taste a little bit, no. I'm saying the research on smoking, just smoke one. I don't think the research on smoking is one cigarette a week per person is causing a problem either. Obviously, the lack of control and moderation in both respects is causing problems to the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
So would serving a high fat food that person encouraging it, or would that be a problem that we were going to start serving?
I don't know how close to a 50-50 suffix is this, that if you eat a little bit of liver once a week, little chopped liver once or twice a week, that is.
I don't think there are any studies that have looked at that. like I've told people, one second, Maxi cousins called me up in Mitzvah Shabbos about diabetes, and his sugar was through the roof, so he didn't check in Shabbos. So I asked him, you know, what do you have in Shabbos? He says he lost that challah, so he has a ganze challah for every single suda and lost potato kegel, and he said by the Kedeshim and Sapper, they have this cream cake that's unbelievable that they have. So I said, what do you expect is going to happen if that's what you've had? Shabbos. I said, you know, the Shami Seri does a lot of things, but, you know, it doesn't burn off calories. That's the one thing that it doesn't have to do. And all these things, you know, one cigarette and having a little, the problem is that once it's there, people don't have portion control and they can't control themselves. So that may be a little naive.
So we're making the leap in terms of smoking and saying that even one cigarette's a problem for other rounds.
So you said maybe we should prohibit serving chopped liver. The Gemara has the cloud based on the pasuk until Mshayim Psoim Hashem. If something is nowhere near 50-50, then if people, whoever is not nervous about it, so it's not called a Safek Sakana. Whoever is nervous, it is. If somebody is, nobody was nervous about smoking. Till they came out with the statement that it's absolutely Vadaya Safek Sakana. So you can't say Shem Psoim Hashem anymore. If it's very close to 50-50, it depends. I don't know. You say there's no research yet to determine how much of the suffix is there by having a little bit of chopped liver once a week or twice a week. So Kozman, we don't have any evidence of how serious it is. So you say Shamib Sayyid Mashem. Once it will be ascertained that it's a real suffix akana, then we'll have to stop serving the chopped liver.
In terms of the Allah, Isser and Heather, I understand, but what about just doing the right thing? I mean, there's Isser and Heather, and there's just, you know, being nice and being, you know, considerate to people around you. Does that have any bearing at all? Would that be encouraging people to
good idea.
Cut down on the...
It's a good idea. I remember the one and only time that I visited the Nazir in Yerushalayim, he was trying to convince me that I should become a vegetarian. That it says in the Shulchan Aruch that people who study Kabbalah, he was into Kabbalah, I am not into Kabbalah, so people who study Kabbalah have to be vegetarians, they're not allowed to eat fleshik unless on days when you don't say tachin, Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Don Ligoyen was a strict vegetarian, he wouldn't eat the fish or milk or cheese or anything merachai, unless on days when you don't say tachin. So he was trying to convince me I should become a vegetarian, and he said when his daughter got married to Rabbi Goren, so they had, everything was parva, and they had imitation chopped liver at the wedding, and my wife can I was there with my wife, and his wife can show my wife how to make imitation chopped liver. So his wife, once he said, my wife will show your wife, so his wife said it in Hebrew, don't make him crazy. He can buy a book on the corner. He had published a little pamphlet then about being a vegetarian. He said, he can buy a book on the corner, don't try to convince him of anything. So my wife wasn't interested in the power of a vegetarian. It's a good idea though. If now they think that that's a suffix, maybe we should cut it out. Good.
Just to expand on that, the idea of the nichshol, that if smoking, obesity, and we know this for alcohol, if it's an addiction or it can help tip through the social eating to a person into a bad behavior they were trying to resist, does that fit into the category? Not
sure.
Not just the pasuk, I mean the actual nichshol.
Yeah, sure it does.
But isn't that what your question is? So what are the levels of judgment? How do we judge? Do you have to provide an alternative no matter what? Is that would that be? I'm in a sense pushing in a soft direction.
If neighbor the city mitzvah, strictly speaking, is only when you're providing him with mamish sakona, a mamish and avheira. If it's not 100%, then the Gemara says a suffix is not called if neighbor. But it probably turns out that it's always wrong. It's probably going to turn out that it was always a nichshon.
I'm not sure you can directly compare it, because even if this one cigarette is not, strictly speaking, harmful, it has no food value either. I mean, it's just, it has an addictive chemical in it. I don't know of anybody who eats chopped liver once a week and then becomes addicted to it. I don't know anybody who eats tongue once a week and becomes addicted to it. I don't know anybody who eats sweet. I don't like sweet bread stuff. Who eats sweet bread once a week and becomes addicted, especially because they're simple and they're just eating a little bit of it.
You do become addicted. You enjoy it, you take a second. Mm-hmm. That's addiction. No?
Sure.
Take a second. So if you eat enough of it, it's a satana.
If you take a food roll, I play tennis. And at 61, the guys who I play with, I don't know anybody who doesn't have a scar from surgery on their knees. I mean, if you play, you will end up with knee problems. Just, you know, it's not a bad eye, but it's pretty close. It's kind of a bad eye. So should be stopped, you know, against, you know, look, don't play tennis, you will damage your body.
If you play tennis for many years, you mean?
But most of the pros get out of the game in their 30s damaged.
Uh-huh.
So it's not, you know, I mean, I'm not the level of a pro, so I get to stretch it out a bit.
I don't know, I think that depends on how intensively they play also. I mean, you know, Bar Meshach, my father, many years before he retired, played handball regularly, every week. And, you know, Bar Meshach, to this day, his knees are still okay. Really, it depends on how intensively, you know, tennis players are whole circuit. You know, we know how long tennis games are and how intense they are. I think there's a certain amount of judgment in, you know, what you do.
In Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Nadi Bihuda, Pesachet Shuva, in the beginning of Hilchos Shechit, quotes Nadi Bihuda, that for the sake of Parnasah, one is permitted, a love who knows Eastamshem, one is permitted to put his life a little bit into a suffix, Akana. He goes hunting in the forest to catch wild deer, he knows that he may get killed. So the Tzarech Parnasah, it's permissible. But just for fun, he says, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to go hunting for fun, because there is a suffix, Akana. So Taka, this is what, for exercise? Why do people exercise? But there are other forms of exercise. I mean, this form of exercise is for fun. The taka for fun. It's questionable whether you're allowed to put yourself into a self-accept fun.
The last question. So I work on a college campus where, like, every college campus is banned from sexuality, where a lot of the different organizations on campus, including student health centers and what, give out protection for students to have safe sexual relations. From a halachic perspective, is this something that we would do, would not do, they're probably doing it anyway?
It's better than not. It's better to give it than not. I mean, you're encouraging them.
No, no, right.
You're not encouraging them. At least you're trying to protect them. I think you should distribute.
Better to give it.
Yeah.
Would this be true even on a high school level?
Unfortunately, in some high schools, it's on a high school level also. You have to educate the students and tell them that this is not recommended in a big way. And they say, those who want to do it, though, so they better protect themselves.
And you're okay to provide it.
You have no choice. We're going to do it anyway.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
I think everybody can head downstairs and keep lunch right now on the ground floor.
Very good. This is